My name is Eleanor Mann. My husband and I are here in Akure, Nigeria. And today we are going to be talking about the marriage covenant. The first topic we will cover is the husband's need for the wife to give him a sexually exciting marriage. Before we start this, let's spend just a little bit of time talking about what marriage covenant means. We are talking about the agreement that we make before God when we get married. It does not matter whether you are married in a church, whether it is a civil ceremony, whether it is outside, whether it is in the village or in the countryside. When you make an agreement, a marriage agreement with your husband, you are married. If you decide later on that maybe even if you weren't a Christian, you are still married because of this covenant that you have made before God with your husband. If you decide later that you want to have some kind of ceremony in the church, or if you have both, if it's traditional to have a civil ceremony and a church ceremony, that is fine. But when you have the second ceremony, you are already married. You can do a vow renewal later on, but you do not have to redo a marriage in order to be married. I say this because I have known people who were married as non-believers. Then they accepted Christ and maybe 5 years later decided that they wanted to be married in a church. It's fine to do that if you treat it as a rededication or a renewal or a celebration or something like that. But if you treat it as a marriage, think about what that implies about your children. That they were born illegitimate, which is not true because you were married. Does that make sense? So it's a covenant. It's an agreement. In Proverbs 2:17, it's talking about an immoral woman, but it mentions this covenant. It says that leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. So even in Scripture, it's talking about marriage being a covenant, an agreement that's not just with your husband. It's an agreement made with God. Let's backtrack just a little bit. If I can get someone to look up Genesis 2:18, let's see. Let's just go around the circle. If you don't have your Bible, or if you are busy holding a baby, you do not need to read. Just say pass, and the next person will get the verse, okay? No problems. I think there's some Bibles in here. If you don't have a Bible and want one, but it's no problem to me for you not to read. Just say pass, okay? So if you would take Genesis 2:18. Let me pass out some verses first, and then we'll come back to you, okay? And then Genesis 2, verses 24 and 25, and I'm sorry, I don't know all the names. Genesis 2, 24 and 25, okay? And then if you would do Psalm 45:10, okay? And we will let you take care of your baby, your sweet little one. That is more important. Okay? Genesis 2:18.
And do not yourself. Do not wish that the man should be alone. I will make him a help meet for
him. Okay. Now, let's talk about that first, and then we'll go on to the next one. Okay? Okay, in this particular verse, God is talking about making a helpmate for Adam. Why did he say he was going to do this? Why did Adam need a helpmate? Okay, it was not good for him to be alone. Was this any kind of a lacking on Adam's side that he needed someone else in his life? Well, actually, Adam at this time was in a perfect state. This was before the fall. He had not sinned. So he was not lacking anything in terms of something that was wrong or missing. But at the same time, he did need a helper. And God said, I will make a helpmate suitable, or a helper suitable for him. And the literal word there for suitable is corresponding, which is talking about a puzzle piece. You know, some of the puzzle pieces have little holes in them, and they'll have a piece that sticks in, and you have to find the two that match together perfectly. And it's that same idea, that God created Eve as a perfect corresponding part to enrich Adam's life. Two people, but God bringing them together. Okay? Genesis 2, 24 and 25. This is a little bit farther down the same chapter.
Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall keep unto his wife, and shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed.
This is a familiar verse to us, but had you ever thought before that Adam and Eve didn't have a mother and a father? They were created as adults. So when God says this, and it's recorded in Holy Scripture, it is what we call a universal covenant. It is true for everyone. The command is to leave your father and your mother and be joined to, for him to be joined to his wife. So it's the beginning of a new family. Not that they would forget their parents, because we know from Ephesians 6, we're told to honor our father and mother, always. But in terms of the two becoming one, that was the husband and the wife. And the word there, they shall become one flesh, is from the same root word that means glue. They are to be joined together. Where a friend of mine was speaking on this, and she used the illustration of two paper hearts that were glued together. And if you tried to pull them apart, part of one heart came off with the other one because they're glued. They're no longer two separate pieces. They are one. And that's what God says marriage is. Okay, did I give Psalm 45:10?
Yes, please. Raise your hand with open. Consider and incline your head. Protect your home also and your father's house.
Okay, so we're talking in Genesis that says, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother. Now, specifically in this psalm, it's talking about the wife. When it says, forget your people and your father's house, again, that's not saying don't ever see your parents again, because we know from Ephesians that's not true. But it is talking about uniting with your husband in a special way that is a permanent joining together. So that's the marriage covenant that we are talking about here. Both husbands and wives have needs that are not based on sin or lack of faith, but they are needs that God has designed only their spouse to meet because of the nature of the need. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, specifically in two areas. If you as a wife do not meet this need of your husband, then where is he going to go to have it met? There is no legitimate way to meet this need outside of marriage. He can either break his marriage vows, or he can live with this need never being met fully. So that's the responsibility and the joy and the privilege that God has given us as wives. If you are not going to meet this need, who do you want to meet it? God's designed us as wives to meet this. Legitimate needs do not indicate an imperfection or a fault, just like with Adam. The fact that God said it was not good for him to be alone and created a helper for him did not mean anything was wrong with Adam. God created Adam both perfect and good, yet with needs only Eve could meet, and vice versa. Covenant needs are not grown out of, but instead increase with spiritual growth. So the needs that your husband has now are not going to decrease as he becomes more, as he matures spiritually, and as you both mature spiritually. They will only increase, and that is the way God designed it. Your ability to meet these needs will increase correspondingly. And that's what we're talking about today. There, some of these things you cannot understand You just accept as true the, I can't keep that folded, the different, the ways that we think differently are put there by God. They're in our creation. They are neither right nor wrong. Okay? Let's look at Ephesians 5. This is our primary passage that we are going to be referring to today. We're going to focus on two verses in it. So, what we are going to do right now is to read those two specific verses. Okay? Would you please read Ephesians 5:22? And I'll give you a verse in just a minute.
Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior.
Okay, that's great. We'll stop right there. Yeah. What can we get you?
No, I think it's just like that.
Ah.
With this one.
Is it behind
it's
here? Is it a backpack?
No, it's here. Okay, alright.
I am sorry, I don't see it. No problem. Okay, let's look specifically at Ephesians 5:22. We are not going to major on the area of submission or being subject to our own husbands, but I did want to touch on this because it is the very first thing mentioned in this passage that addresses the subject of marriage. I think the key to submission, and by the way, submission means exactly what it says. It is actually a military term, and it means to be in a certain ranking of authority. So when it says we are to be subject to our husbands, it means that he has authority over us. That is not necessarily a popular idea today, but it's what Scripture says. But the key to the whole area of submission is the end of that verse. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. And I can remember as a single woman asking my Bible study leader, how can I prepare for marriage? And I thought for sure that she would say, oh, you need to learn to keep house, or you need to learn to cook, or all these different things that I could learn. But in actuality, what she said was walk with God. Learn to walk with God now. And it is true that it is only to the degree that I can trust God to be over me and to be working in my life and to have my best interests at heart, it is only to that degree that I can trust the same to be true for my husband. It frees him to not be perfect, but to have the confidence that he can lead our family and that he can minister to me. And it is a gift I give my husband to submit to him. It is totally referring to a role. It has nothing to do with value or worth, because God says we are all equal as believers. And God says he loves us with an everlasting love. And God says in Psalm 139 that he has made us in a very special way. And that, let me read that real quickly. That psalm comes alive again when you have children. You have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. God knows us inside and out. He knows how we think. He knows what our personalities are. He made us that way. And welcome. There are three chairs over here that we can move around. He made us to be the way that we are. So when we're talking about being in subject to our husbands, it has nothing to do with that work. It just has to do with authority and order in the home. So I wanted to touch on that for just a minute. Because, like I said, you give your husband a great gift when you are willing to submit to him, cooperate with him, work out decisions together, but at the same time trusting that God is going to work through him to protect you and to lead the family. And I can give you a quick example on me learning about that as a young wife. When we got married, before we got married, right after I graduated from university, my father worked for a car manufacturer, and he helped me to buy a car so that I could use it to get back and forth to my work. So John had a very old car. When we got married, he gave that to someone who needed a car very badly, and because we didn't need more than one car ourselves. So after we'd been married a little while, we decided that the car I had was expensive to run. The parts were expensive, it used a lot of gas, so we decided to sell it. So we did. But then we had to replace it with a less expensive car because we still needed transportation. So one day he came home from work and said, "Honey, I bought us a car today. I found a car for sale and I bought it. So now we have a car." Well, God, by a miracle, kept my mouth shut. And as we drove that car in the next weeks, we found out that that car was a complete dud. Someone had actually cheated us. When we washed it, the water poured through the back window because there was some steel there. We had trouble with the steering. We took it to the shop, and it had the wrong parts on it. The parts were literally falling off. We had to basically sell it for nothing and then try to figure out how to replace it with another car. Well, through that situation, or a few weeks after it had happened, John came to me and he said, "Honey, I have learned my lesson. I will never make another purchase like that without consulting you first." And that's the way it's been for the 44 years we've been married. So it was a large financial loss for us at the time, but in the long run, I gained so much because my husband saw that I did not condemn him, that I could trust him, and God worked through him. Even though the situation itself was difficult, the ramifications of it and the long-range consequences were so much better than if I had nagged and argued and fussed at him and made him feel like he couldn't make good decisions. So God knows what he's doing when he puts our husbands in authority over us, and we can either undermine that or we can support him and encourage him and back him up and live our lives in the order in which God's intended for our family. So that's the issue of subjection. I just wanted to touch on it. But now we are going to move on. Something that we give our husbands that no one else can legitimately give him is a sexually exciting marriage. Now, are all of you all married? Are you married? Are you engaged? Okay. If it's okay with you for her to stay, that's fine. I don't want to embarrass you. Okay. That someday that will be something she needs to learn, but not right now. Okay. So that is a great gift that we can give our husbands. And it's a gift that you can give him for the whole totality of your marriage, not just when you are newlyweds. And remember, legitimate needs do not indicate an imperfection or fault. The fact that your husband has this need does not mean that something is lacking in his life or that he is wrong or that it's going to change. As he grows and matures, this need will only intensify. It is not just for the childbearing years. this is a part of your relationship that will last as long as you are married. It is a need that only you can meet. And it is a way that we can minister to our husbands and contribute to their lives in a very, very special way. So let's talk about some of these areas. I also have a handout to give you when we get a little farther along. So some of this information and verses you'll have on the handout too. The first thing is, be available to comfort your husband physically. This is another way that men and women think completely differently. If you would look up Genesis 24:67, and I'm sorry, I should know your name and I don't. Genesis 24:67. And then if the next lady could look up Genesis 26:8, please. Okay? Okay. The context of this verse is Rebecca had just arrived. She did not know Isaac. She had been recruited by one of his servants to be his wife. And her parents actually said, well, why don't you wait a while before you go get married to this man? And she said, no, I'll go now. So she hopped on her camel and they went to where Isaac was. So when she got there, he married her and they went to bed together. And why does it say at the very end of that, or what was the result, does it say at the very end of that verse? He was comforted after the death of his mother. Now, if my mother had died, that is the last thing in the world I would be interested in. I would want to be held. I would want to be talked to. I would probably be crying. I would want someone to rub my head. But that's just a different way that men and women think. As wives, we comfort our husbands, and sex is a great comfort to him when he is in a time of stress. When men are in a time of stress is when temptation is the greatest for them. Whether it's stress from the job, whether it's stress in the family, financial, health, any issue. When a man is under stress, he is in a real position, dangerous position of temptation. And if we, as his wives, are willing to comfort him by giving ourselves to him physically, willingly, that is something that will make a huge difference in his life. And it is something that only we can give. Only a wife can give. Rebecca was a wise woman because she comforted Isaac after his mother's death. I did not understand the context of that verse for a long time after I was married. And the first time someone mentioned it to me, I was kind of like, you have got to be kidding. But then when I asked my husband, he said, yes, I can see that. So we are different. We are different, but that is something we can do for our husbands. Okay, let's read a little bit later about Rebecca. To Genesis 26:8. Okay, and he wasn't just stroking her cheek. He was caressing her in a way that a husband caresses a wife. Enough so that the king who observed this said, oh, she's not your sister, she's your wife. We need to let our husbands touch us. You may come from a very affectionate family. You may come from a very affectionate culture, or like me, you may come from a family where we did not do much hugging. I was not used to being physically affectionate, and it was something for me to learn how not to almost without thinking, shrink back when my husband touched me, or to be shy about him being physically affectionate with me. I mean, they weren't doing this on the street. They felt they were unobserved in a little courtyard. So they weren't being indiscreet at all. It just, the king happened to look down from a window and see them. But let your husband express himself physically to you, affectionately. Welcome. We have chairs. Welcome, we are glad you're here. Okay, so we are talking, you are coming at the best part. We are talking about how a wife meets her husband's need to give him a sexually exciting marriage. So, comfort your husband by being intimate with him when you know he's stressed and when he needs it. And let him touch you in the way a husband touches a wife. Don't shrink from him. Don't say, oh, I don't want that right now. You know, let him enjoy you as a husband enjoys his wife. If you do those things, you are ministering to your husband in a way that no one else can. And you are increasing his self-confidence. And you are meeting a need that no one else can meet for him. Another issue is the care of our body as the temple of God. Proverbs 27:20. Who would like to look that up? Here, why don't we come over to you? If you'll look at Proverbs 27:20. Let's see. The next verse is 1 Corinthians 7, verse 4. Can we come back to you? 1 Corinthians 7, verse 4. And the last one we'll look up right now is Song of Solomon 4, verses 1 through 7. Okay. Who else would, anyone else want a verse that I haven't given one to yet? I'm sorry, I don't know your name. We were introduced and I don't remember it. Would you like to look up Song of Solomon chapter 4, verses 1 through 7? And I'll get you to read it in just a minute, okay? Okay, so Proverbs 27:20.
Death and destruction are never satisfied, and neither are the eyes of man.
So, are a man's eyes ever satisfied from looking at his wife? No. Does your husband ever get tired of looking at you? No. Does your husband ever get tired of looking at your body? No. Does it matter whether you just had a baby and have your little baby belly? No. Does it matter if you're 68 years old with gray hair and all kinds of wrinkles? No. Your husband never grows tired of looking at you. And that is a great ministry you can have in his life, is to allow him to do that. Don't get undressed in the toilet, in the bathroom. Don't go behind the door. Let your husband watch you. It will minister to him in a way that no one else can. Who else do you want to do that for him? No one. No one. When you meet the needs of your husband in these ways, your husband has no need for pornography or for going to any other woman. Our husbands live and work in a world where there are predators, women who are seeking men. Even in the church, that is possible. So we don't have to be fearful of that, but the needs that men have are intended, of these men, their needs are intended to be met by their wives. And it's a privilege for us to do that. If we don't, we are really leaving them open to temptation. So it's a ministry to your husband to take care of these things for him. So let him look at you. Who do I want him looking at? No one. He will never get tired of looking at you. Let him. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 4.
Why not ask not covered? Who brought our husband for the husband? And likewise also, the husband has not covered. Who is still for the husband?
Okay. Another word for this is authority. The wife has no authority over her own body, but her husband does. It's in the Bible. It's not me saying this. It's Scripture saying this. Do you know how your husband likes you to wear your hair? Do you wear your hair for him, or do you wear it for the other women in the church? Do you know how your husband likes you to dress? Do you know what necklines he likes? My husband does not like polka dots. So I don't wear polka dots. You know, does that mean I am subjecting my personality or kind of not expressing myself? No, it is a choice I make to minister to my husband in this way. And I want him to know when he sees the way I am dressing and the way I am doing my hair that I'm doing it for him. So we do not have authority over our own body, but the husband does. We're not looking at the husband's side of all these things. There is a husband's side too, but the men are talking about that. It's what we are looking at is our responsibility before God. There is another aspect of this verse. When I was doing a Bible study over this verse, one of my applications was never say no. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. It is so easy to get into the habit, especially when you have young children, of, oh, honey, I'm just so tired. Oh, I have a headache. Oh, I have to get up with a baby in the night. Oh, I have to go to work in the morning. There are a lot of legitimate excuses. But once you get into the habit of finding an excuse, it can really affect this aspect of your relationship with your husband, because he doesn't know what kind of mood you're going to be in when he starts becoming expressing a desire to be intimate with you. I want my husband to know that I am always available to him. And that way, if there is a situation where you're sick, or, you know, there's some specific incident that makes it difficult for you to be intimate with him, that is the exception rather than the norm, and then he will be sensitive to that. But my application was, do not say no. He does not have authority. I do not have authority over my own body, but as my husband, he has authority. And I am trusting God to meet his needs in this way, through me. Okay, that's okay. Children are a gift from the Lord, aren't they? Babies cry. That's just a part of it. They don't know how to express themselves any other way. Okay, let's look at the last one. Song of Solomon, chapter 4, verses 1 through 7.
Behold, thou art faithful, my love. Behold, thou art faithful. Thou art closed. Those eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that are kept from mountainous. Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are evil shorn, which came up from the washing, whereof everyone bears wind, and none is barren among them. Thy lips are like a friend of fire, and thy speech is comely. Thy temples are like a piece of it, pomegranate within thy locks. Thy neck is like the flower of David, yielded for an amory, whereon their hand is thousand buckler, all shields of mighty men. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins, which feed among the leaves, until the day break and the shadows be away. I will get me to the mountain of mine, and to the hill of frankincense. Thou art all there, my love. There is no strength in thee.
Okay. Make yourself available for your husband to look at, to marvel at. Now, when I read through this passage, some of the specific things, your hair is like a flock of goats descending. No, I'm like, how is that attractive? But it is intended as a description of how beautiful he thinks she is, because at the very end he says, "You are altogether beautiful, my darling, and there is no blemish in you. Let your husband enjoy you. Let him gaze at you." Now, one thing that means is that you are around him. Are your children going to bed early enough, once they're past the infant stage, where you have some time with your husband in the evenings, just to sit together, read, talk, whatever you're doing? Make yourself available for him to enjoy looking at you. We already talked about how his eyes never grow tired of that. So that's another part of caring for your body as a temple. And not being afraid. This woman has obviously has worked hard to make herself attractive. And she's making herself attractive for her husband. And then she's letting him enjoy her. Okay? Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's look at Proverbs 5. Excuse me. Everybody can turn to this. We're going to go for about a little less than 15 minutes and then stop for a break. You can get up and move around. I will be finished with this topic, so I'll turn the recorder off. If you have a question, feel free to ask it. Visit among yourselves. We'll take just a short break and then we'll start again talking about respect. Okay? So Proverbs 5. Verses 15 through 19. Who would like to read that?
Whose water? Whose waters out of their new system? And running waters out of their new way. Let thy fountains be fast and low, and rivers of water. Let them be only their dust, and not strangers to the sea. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the lovely land, and let her be. Let her bless and satisfy thee, and thou lavish on thee the Lord. And why wilt thou, my son, be lavished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of his children? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and the wandering of the
Lord. Okay, that's great. Okay, so why should this husband go anywhere else? He has plenty of water in his own well. It is even full to the extent of overflowing. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. Are you enjoying your husband? So let's make sure that we are not so caught up in the daily parts of life. Work, children, household, ministry, family, that we are not just enjoying each other. And let him rejoice in your physical attributes. Let your breath satisfy him at all times. Don't withhold parts of your body from him to be able to enjoy. Okay. Our husbands, when they leave work to come home to us, drive by many signs. They drive by bars. They drive by all sorts of places where they can stop instead of come directly home to us. So we want to make home being a place that they so much look forward to, they cannot wait to get back to us. And part of that is knowing that we are going to minister to them in this special way. That we are going to let them enjoy us, that we are going to enjoy our relationship with him. And when I talk about this, it is not only a one-sided relationship. We are enjoying this relationship also, but at the same time we are doing it with a mindset of not what we get, but what we are giving to him. Okay. I am going to pass around if you will take one and just pass it on. Let's look while we are doing that. Let's turn to Esther, the book of Esther. Esther is an example of a woman who is available to her husband. Okay. I'm going to read Esther chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. So it came about when the command and decree of the king were heard, and many young ladies were gathered to Susa, the capital, into the custody of Haggai, that Esther was taken to the king's palace into the custody of Haggai, who was in charge of the women. Now the young lady pleased him and found favor with him, so he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and food, gave her 7 choice maids from the king's palace, and transferred her and her maids to the best place in the harem. Welcome. Under whose charge was Esther placed? It was Haggai. It was Haggai, okay? And what was his response as an administrator to her? Yes, and she pleased him and found favor with him. So she was willing to respond to a man who was an expert in the field of beautification. And he provided her with, it says, with cosmetics and food, took her to the best place in the harem. So she knew that she was in a position to possibly become the king's wife, and she was willing to give herself some time to devote to being as beautiful as she could be, to be ready to minister to her husband in this way. Was this attention to personal appearance and sexual allurement on behalf of Esther for her husband, the king, condemned by God? No, because she's considered a heroine of the faith. Verse 12. Now when the turn of each young lady came to go in to King Ahasuerus, after the end of her 12 months under the regulations for the women, for the days of their beautification were completed as follows: 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with spices and cosmetics for women. So that's a year, isn't it? The young lady would go into the king in this way. Anything that she desired was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. Okay? So she went into the, to make a long story short, she went into the king, she found favor with him. And he married her. So she took, she made some extensive preparation, didn't she? She devoted herself to this kind of beautification. And she was willing to use a little of the wisdom of the world in terms of pleasing her husband. Not in a spiritual sense, but just in the physical means of becoming beautiful. What kind of oils, what kind of fragrances. She was working, but she also was working at it. It wasn't just something that happened. She was focusing on becoming beautiful for her potential husband. And the result, you know that the rest of the story about Esther, not only did she please her husband, the king, but she was able to save her nation. God used all this whole situation in order to save the nation of Israel from destruction. But the the key thing in terms of what we're talking about that I want you to get out of this is that it is not wrong to take time and effort to make ourselves physically attractive for our husbands. That God not only accepts that he says it is a good thing. And again, the thing I've shared so many times is that this is a special ministry that God has given us for our husbands. This is a ministry that no one else can fulfill for him. And it is a legitimate need he has to have a sexually exciting marriage. Be aggressive with your husband. He doesn't have to be the one to initiate every time. Let's look for just a minute at the sheet I gave you. 7 ways the godly woman can excite her husband. These are, the first page is a summary of all the covenants, all the parts of the marriage covenant that the wives make their husbands. Just so you can have a copy of the whole thing. The men are getting a copy of the men's and the women's covenants, so they will have the whole thing. We have just the woman's side of it for you to look at later. This is a worksheet you can work out on your own. I know you've been given lots of materials. Just add this to the list of things you're going to look at eventually. But consider these 7 ways that the godly woman can excite her husband. Visual stimulation. We already talked about the fact that the eyes of man are never satisfied. Clothing and appearance. What do your clothes look like? And do you know your husband's preferences? Some men like a V neckline. Some men like a more of a U-shaped neckline. Dress for your husband and have some things that you can wear for him alone in the privacy of your own home or your own bedroom. When my children were little, I had some clothes that I could wear to bed so that I could get up in the middle of the night and take care of them, you know, dash out of the room to take care of them. But also had some things that were just for my husband, so that even if we had to work it in between feeding times, we could have some special times together. So have some things like that. And know what his preference is. Dress for him. When you are having special time alone with your husband, you are not going to church. So you can dress in an entirely different way than you do when you go to church. Your hair. The way you wear your hair is a great excitement to your husband. Find out how he likes it. I wear my hair longer than a lot of women my age because my husband likes it. And most of the time I'm wearing it long down on my shoulders, but he also likes it pulled back. So I wear my hair for him. I figure he looks at me more than I look at myself. So why not please him? Use your eyes as a source of excitement. Do you ever flirt with your husband? When he catches his eye across the room, you kind of lift your eyebrows a little bit. You know, you don't have to be dating to flirt. He knows that special little look is just for him, and he will love it. Perfume. Scent. When my children were little, I tried to change my top before John came home from work, because usually by the end of the day, it smelled like spit up. Just something to be a little fresh for him. Wear some kind of scent. Koyan has some lovely rose soap that she has put in our room that I have really enjoyed while we're here. So soap, lotion, perfume, something that makes it fun to be close to you and that will excite him. Your lips, your mouth. Kiss him a lot. If it is not usual in the Nigerian culture to be affectionate in public, then as soon as you get him away from the public, be affectionate with him. Your breath. Let your husband enjoy your breath. If you look at these verses, they are talking about how doing these things is biblically correct. Biblically, see, she's excited. She says, yeah, Mom. These things are biblically correct for a wife to do with her husband. It's very different to go when you've been thinking purity, 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 and then you go through a short ceremony and everything has changed. Everything that was wrong is now right. But that is true. It is impossible for a husband or a wife to lust after their spouse. It's impossible. Once you were married, all of those feelings of attraction are good. They're God created. And they're a way that you can minister to your husband in a way that no one else can. No one else can. So, look through this. I hope it will be an encouragement to you. Let me two other ideas. Ask your husband what he finds sexually exciting in your relationship. Just communicate about it. It's so easy to assume that we know what our spouses are thinking, but you don't really know what he's thinking unless you ask him. And not only will you then be doing what he enjoys, but he knows that you care enough to ask. Make a list and think ahead on calendar dates when you will give him an erotic night he will remember. When our children were little, we didn't have family nearby, but we used to trade off nights with our friends. We would keep their children, and then we would have a night off, and they would keep our children, and we would have a night off. So figure out a way to get some time alone with your husband, even if you need to plan in advance. Usually with our schedules nowadays, we do have to plan in advance. You don't have to spend a lot of money or go far away. Candles are not expensive. You can figure out a way to make it exciting for him, and he will appreciate it. The times when I have planned a special night for my husband and it was all on my initiative, he still talks about it. Really makes an impression. So enjoy doing some of those things. So, we are going to stop and take a break before we start up again.